You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up Here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
We hope that your morning's off to a great start. Happy Friday, and thank you so much for joining us. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. This is Daybreak, and my name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. It is Friday. We're glad you're here. The war rages on in Iran. We're in month number two. So, we were told yesterday, could be 2-3 weeks. It'll all be over. Did you read these reports last night that said, and I think it was in either the Times or the Washington Post, that said the president is willing to just give up even if Iran doesn't. he doesn't. Now it's like, we don't need the Strait of Hormuz. All right.
So is he bored? Is that what this is? Is the boredom set in and now we need to move on to something different? Or has he seen his ratings and his poll numbers because of this war? And all of a sudden now we need to end it as quickly and be done with it and sweep it under the rug as fast as it started. That's where my mind goes.
I'm going to go with the latter. Or maybe he was visited by a ghost, three ghosts. Who knows? But yeah, he's just who. We're in our second month. Here's some headlines from the region. It doesn't get any better. Iran is firing more missiles at Israel and Gulf Arab states, with a spokesperson for its military insisting Thursday that Tehran maintains hidden stockpiles of arms, munitions, and production facilities. Oh, that's all. That's all we need to hear.
Haven't we obliterated all of that, though?
Jamie, how many times do I have to tell you?
Okay, all right.
Your reliance on facts.
I'll just quit asking questions.
Bringing out receipts of things that were said are really irrelevant to the arguments.
All right, I'll remember that. I'll try to do better and remember that.
Please, no more facts.
Okay, all right. In Lebanon, where Israel has launched a ground invasion against Iran-backed Hezbollah militants, Israeli strikes have now killed 27 people in just the last 24 hours. That is according to the health ministry.
And on that note, the death toll from the war has risen to more than 1,900 people in Iran and over 1,300 people in Lebanon. 13 U.S. military members and 10 Israeli soldiers have been killed. 19 civilians have been killed in Israel, as well as a number of civilians and soldiers on land and sea in the Gulf region. Millions of people in Iran and Lebanon have been displaced. And it's important to keep throwing those numbers out to show the impact of a unilateral personal war on real people and the globe itself.
Especially because you're not going to get those numbers from this administration, because they would prefer just to not talk about them or have them reported. And finally, Bahrain, a Gulf monarchy that hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, has arrested dozens of people throughout the war for filming strikes and demonstrations expressing support for Iran and on suspicion of spying for it.
Well, that's what's happening in the Middle East. What's happening on this side of the ocean? We have some stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right, let's start right here. University of Wisconsin President Jay Rothman says the Board of Regents is trying to remove him, but he is refusing to resign because no clear reason has been given for the loss of confidence. He says that the regents told him an unidentified majority. Oh, that's always tricky, the unidentified majority. They no longer support his leadership, but each regent may have different concerns, and none have been clearly explained to him. We don't like you. Why not? Lots of reasons. Rothman also questions the process, saying the decision appears to have been made without a recent full board meeting or open discussion, raising transparency concerns. He was given three options. Option numero uno, announce a retirement later this year. Option two, resign with 120 days notice. Or option three, be fired. He said leaving now would hurt the university system during a critical time. He points to his major accomplishments, including one of the largest state funding increases in 20 years, operational changes, direct admissions for students, and securing private funding for tuition support. His tenure also included difficult and controversial moves like closing or downsizing multiple branch campuses and negotiating a deal with Republican lawmakers to scale back DEI programs in exchange for funding. See what happens when you acquiesce to them? Rothman also handled student protests and political pressure, often siding with law enforcement and working closely with the legislature. Oh, the pattern is starting to reveal itself, wouldn't you say? Critics include faculty unions. They say he's been disconnected from staff, students, and campus needs, pointing to disagreements over curriculum and broader systems decision. Now, the board has not publicly explained its concerns yet, and they met in closed session, meaning a final decision could come soon, and leadership of the universities of Wisconsin may change quickly. Yeah, it sounds like there are a number of things that could be a reason if you're looking at the UW system that people would say, yeah, it's time to go.
I mean, I feel like there's going to be more to this story. Anytime you have a story like this that comes out and it's this quick and somebody's being asked to step down in this manner, it feels like there's always more, and we're not going to get that more until a final decision has been made, he's been removed, and then they have a plan in place. But I mean,
you don't think it's one of those scandals like the last college administrator that was asked to leave because of some films that he produced?
See, you know, it's in 2026, it's really hard to tell, and I don't want to speculate on anything.
I don't want to speculate either,
but I feel like
there's
going to be so much more to this particular story. And, you know, I think, though, if you're somebody who's watching this, or you're a student, or somebody who's, you know, involved with UW, I think you probably have a few questions right now about, like, what's happening? Why is this happening?
And if the board of trustees is not following protocol, and there is no transparency, that's always an issue too. No matter what the person they're trying to have leave has done or has alleged to have done.
Yeah.
It's still like, but you still have to follow the procedures.
I'm going to assume that this is going to be a story we're going to hear more of over the next few weeks.
I can't wait.
Well, you know, we'll have it in our stuff we need to know, because we'll keep talking about it. Speaking of, there are more headlines. Governor Evers signed two bills yesterday, creating a new state grant program to help nonprofits house and support homeless veterans. Now, this program includes about $1.9 million in state funding. It's also designed to match federal dollars, not as a standalone system. Nonprofits can receive $25 per day per veteran from the state, on top of about $82 per day through the federal VA per diem program. To qualify for this, nonprofits have to already be part of the federal VA program, and they also have to provide housing plus wraparound services like counseling, job help, as well as recovery support. This legislation was introduced after the closure of two state-supported veteran housing sites in Green Bay and Chippewa Falls. Those two closures left a lot of service gaps in the area, and right now only four nonprofits statewide qualify, and none are located in the impacted regions. Supporters say this program could expand capacity if more nonprofits apply and become eligible, but there are concerns about limited access as well as geographic gaps, especially in northern and northeastern Wisconsin. The goal for this is to create a more flexible community-based system rather than relying on a small number of state-run sites. If you were paying attention to what happened in Green Bay and Chippewa Falls, it was awful. And I just want to remind everybody and point out once again that there was time to act before those two facilities were closed. The state GOP had a chance to step in and negotiate with the Democrats and come to some sort of resolution. They did not do that. And so now this feels why I'm in support of these bills. It feels like we have to play catch up now based on mistakes that we made in the past that we didn't have to make. They didn't, those closures didn't have to happen. Those veterans didn't have to be displaced. Why do we treat our veterans in this country so badly?
I don't know. And it's more egregious because the top of this, the administration, they could not be more, in word only, pro-veterans. But I think they're only pro-veterans till you're done fighting. They seem to love our war fighters. And then they forget that those war fighters come home. And we talked about a story the other day with traumatic brain injury being one of the leading things, especially from the last wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the veterans have to hop through so many hoops with the VA where it should be, that should be a streamlined process. It's, if you work any job long term and you have good insurance, you don't have to jump through as many hoops as the veterans do with the VA. And the old, you know, the joke of, oh, well, it's the government, you always got to wait. That shouldn't work. That shouldn't be even possible with that. And now, you know, I'm not saying everything on a golden platter, but treat these men and women with the dignity they deserve, the dignity they've earned from their service. And this is when you go into the military, that's part of the package. Just like when you take a job, if you take a job that has benefits, you count on that medical care when you've finished. And if you're not getting it and you really need it and staffing is being cut and facilities are being closed, it is another one of those national shames.
Yes. I don't understand why veteran services, as far as I'm concerned, in every election, right, in every election cycle, there's always pawns for both parties. And there's certain groups that both parties glom onto as we're going to help this group and we need this group's vote and we're the best for this group. Veterans are part of that, those pawns.
Veterans, farmers, yes, coal miners,
minority
people
communities.
Who work for tips.
Always. There's always pawns in every election. And when we're talking about veterans, they shouldn't always be the first programs to be cut. And I'm glad to see the governor sign this bill. It's something. It's going to create this new funding stream. Yep. But let's be realistic. This is not a complete fix for what needs to happen, not only just in the state, but across the country. But I'm glad to see that we're at least putting some stock into services for veterans and getting them some of the proper care and services, not only for them, but their families as well. Those 100% families need support, too. So there's never a complete fix, and we could definitely do more. But at least it's a start, I would say.
You got to start somewhere, as they like to say. Pam Bondi, you have been voted off the island. You are gone. Yesterday, during Stuff You Need to Know, we talked about the president was maybe he was waffling a little bit. Well, the hammer dropped yesterday. The president has ousted Pam Bondi as attorney general. The bad news is she is going to be replaced by deputy attorney general Todd Blanche. Trump in recent days had talked to allies about the possibility of firing Bondi, which we mentioned yesterday. He talked with her personally on Wednesday about the happen. And then, oh boy, the conversation, which one source described as tough, not for Trump. He doesn't care. He just fires people. He indicated Bondi was not long for her role and he would be replacing her in the near future. Sources said Bondi was told she would be given a different job later. Oh, like Christy Noem's Avengers job. In their conversation, Trump floated the possibility of appointing her as a judge after her departure from Justice Department. That's working out well for Jeanine Pirro, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's a good judge. Trump had been frustrated with Bondi on multiple fronts. Sources said, in particular, he's upset over her handling of the Jeffrey Epstein file. He also fumed that she has not investigated or prosecuted enough of his political opponents. That's not the job. One such matter drawing Trump's attention is an investigation into whether former CIA Director John Brennan made false statements to Congress about a years-old intelligence assessment of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Bondi's facing subpoena from the House Oversight Committee to testify about the Epstein matter later this month. Do you notice a pattern, Jamie? The inept guys get to hang around.
Yes.
Cash Patel, Whiskey Pete.
Yeah.
They all stay. But the ladies, Christy Noem and Pam Bondi, you got to go. You're getting a little long in the tooth. You're not to the president's eye candy anymore. And two, he just doesn't like women.
Oh, let's be realistic. This has very little to do with how badly she's done her job or not how badly she's done her job. He was embarrassed by her performance at the hearings.
Of course he was.
He should have been. Yes, and that's what this all stems from. He was embarrassed, and now there's a change. And Todd Blanche is just his personal attorney.
Well, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you, Pam Bondi. We'll see you down the road. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. 7:19 right now. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, 7:22 right now. It is time for Swipe or Stay. This is where we put the politics aside for just a mere 7 minutes, and we talk about something else, and it makes us very, very happy. Our producer, Frank, joins us for this edition of Swipe or Stay. How are you today?
I'm good. Good morning, guys. Brian,
good morning,
happy birthday.
Stop it. Thank you.
I did bring it up. I knew you were
40 today?
Yeah, twice.
Oh, all right. There you go. There we go. Love it.
spring chicken over here.
I just want people to go, wow, he's 80? Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, wow.
You're not you doing look too amazing. Bad.
You look great.
His mind is still going strong.
Yeah,
sharp I don't care,
as a tack,
I don't care how the rest
noonan.
Of me looks.
Do you know Jonathan the tortoise?
I do. He's my spirit animal. I'm going to be asleep. No, I just want, as long as my brain keeps working, I just want my head in a jar doing the show down the
yes,
road
there
somewhere.
You go.
You don't need the
I'll
rest
look into
of me.
It.
All yeah, right.
My head floating in a dream.
As a producer, I'll look into okay. it, make sure
Please,
you
Frank,
work as long
start,
as possible.
Start lining that up. Perfect. I'd like yep. We just need Brian's head and his brain.
That's it. That's
as
we
get into Swipe or Stay, if you're new to the program, this is the segment where I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie are going to have to decide whether to stay and hear more about it or swipe on to the next one. In the case of a tie, producer Parker will be the one to make that Ooh. Decision. As we move on... We have a rock star that is being criticized for delivering a highly political show.
Ooh. Oh, I think I know. I'll stay.
Yeah, I'll stay on this one.
The Boss, Bruce Springsteen, kicked off his tour in Minneapolis Duh. The other
yeah.
night.
Yeah.
Delivering a highly political show, Bruce at one point said, "The mighty E Street Band is here tonight to call upon the righteous power of art, of music, of rock and roll in dangerous times."
He's we been are saying here in, that for the last 10 years.
We are here in celebration and defense of our American ideals, democracy, our Constitution, and our sacred American promise. The America that I love, the America that I've written about for 50 years, that's been a beacon of hope and liberty around the world, is currently in the hands of a corrupt, incompetent, racist, reckless, and treasonous administration. Now.
He hasn't had a hit in decades, Frank. The guy's a loser. He comes
like
from
Brian
Jersey.
Said,
losers.
Like Brian said, Bruce has kind of been saying this stuff
yes.
since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
However, that last line definitely drew the eyes of some people. So Donald Trump
oh.
did have a
Hold
response
Hold on, where's
to this.
My phone?
I'm just going to read the opening line. Bad and very boring singer, Bruce Springsteen, who looks like a dried up prune.
Oh, man. Mr. Pot beat Mr. Kettle.
You could, dried you up could I mean, you could just take the usual adjectives and throw them in there.
Oh, good Lord.
But if you have ever listened to Bruce Springsteen,
yes.
you know what you're getting yourself into.
A few times.
How about it? If you go to a Springsteen
oh,
show,
yeah.
you know this is coming. And even if you're a casual listener or a casual fan, you know he's been very political for a very long time. He's always sung about causes. He fancies himself a modern day like protest singer.
Yeah. He campaigned with Obama and for Hillary.
Right.
I mean, hello,
right.
that's all you really need to know. So if you're surprised, you probably shouldn't buy the tickets to his show because it's been very public.
Yeah, who's going in and complaining? Is it somebody who was actually at the show? That's what I'd like to know.
No, or just the president
just
of
the
United
president.
States.
Just the president.
All
there we
right.
go. That's
because
all
everybody
need.
Else knows what he's about. Real right. quick story. The first time I saw Bruce Springsteen, I'm somebody who likes to look up the set list.
Sure.
If I'm on a weeknight, I've got to know what time to leave. If I'm leaving early, I didn't leave early because it was fantastic.
Right.
But he threw a curveball in the show because it was when South Carolina made a decision on transgender people in bathrooms.
Right.
And then he threw an audible and started Born in the USA and the whole place went nuts.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It was awesome.
That's
seen
awesome.
Him twice that now. He's awesome. Great.
I've seen him a bunch. He is really good. Story
two. Moving on to story number two, because we're already getting wrap-up sign. We have a rock band that is denying reunion rumors.
Well, if they're denying it, I'm going to skip.
Swipe.
High-profile rapper kidnapped and robbed by other famous rapper.
I'm in.
Stay.
Yeah, this one is. I'm. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Here we go. Okay. It's all right. We're good. We lost it for a second. We're good. So Gucci Mane, Brian's favorite artist, was allegedly kidnapped and held at gunpoint by Pooh Shiesty, the other rapper.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Pooh Shiesty is my favorite.
Yes. Sorry.
Aquaman is not.
Gucci Mane was Parker's Gucci favorite. He forced the rap mogul to sign a document releasing him from his recording contract. according to federal prosecutors.
Wow.
According to the complaint, Pooh arranged a meeting in January with Gucci Mane to discuss the terms of his contract. Once he was inside, he and others in the group stormed the room, with one of the defendants barricading the door to prevent people from escaping.
Wow.
Wow.
Pooh read the Suge Knight playbook.
Yes, he proceeded to brandish a pistol and demanded that Gucci Mane release him from his contract. Federal prosecutors said that victims were robbed of cash and jewelry, among other valuable items. And like clockwork, one person accused was seen posting pictures on social media showing the allegedly stolen items, wow, which included Rolex watches.
Frank, what did the president tweet about this?
He did not.
Oh, okay. Oh,
all right.
What do you say?
Pooh-shiesty.
Like,
Pooh-shiesty.
It's a very serious situation.
Serious situation. It happens in my pants every day in the Oval Office.
Pooh-shiesty and his crew could be sentenced up to life in prison for this.
There are people listening right now who don't think you're speaking English.
I mean, I'm kind of not. Look, here's the deal. One rapper held another rapper at gunpoint, is getting charged with kidnapping, robbery. He could face life in prison. He probably won't.
Excuse me.
And
the only rapper I know is Snoop D-O-double-G and 50 Cent.
You know Kid Rock. You are not talking
about rappers.
You know Kid Rock.
I don't.
All right, that's Swiper Stay.
Bye. Thanks, Frank. Another week. Well done. We will talk about it more. When we come back, Senator Kelda Royce joins us to talk about her bid for Wisconsin governor. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning and happy Friday. If you are listening in Madison this morning on WMDX or in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or even in La Crosse on WLCX, we are so glad that you decided to join us. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. On November 3rd, Wisconsinites are going to have the responsibility to elect a new governor to replace Tony Evers. On the Republican side, the party has circled around Tom Tiffany as their candidate. The Democrats, though, are another story. Currently, seven Democrats are still in the race. And with the primary scheduled for August 11th, how is this crowded field going to shake out? One of those candidates, State Senator Kelda Royce, who represents Senate District 26, is here with us today to talk about her campaign and what's going on with the Democrats. Senator, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time. Does it concern you at all that the Republicans have already coalesced around one candidate this early and have the timing advantage of getting their message out behind that one candidate while the Democrats still don't have a front runner?
Good morning, Brian and Jamie. Of course, it does concern me that we've got consolidated Republican support behind an absolute extremist right-wing candidate that we cannot allow to be governor. Wisconsin would be extremely vulnerable during a Trump presidency if Tom Tiffany were our governor. But I think primaries can be really healthy. The problem with a crowded primary, one that's as crowded as what we have, is that folks will sit on the sideline until the very end, and then we end up with a candidate squeaking by with 20, 21% of the vote, a candidate who is very weak in the general election and who puts the governorship at risk. We can't get cocky in Wisconsin just because we've won many statewide elections over the last 10 years. We lost some too. And the truth is that we've got candidates in this race who are not yet prepared to be governor because they're either too new in politics. It doesn't mean they're not great people. It just means this is a time for an experienced fighter who knows what needs to be done on day one. And we've got folks running who will put that governorship at risk because they will be weak candidates in the general against Tom Tiffany. So we've got to make sure we coalesce behind a candidate who's an experienced fighter, can stand up to Trump and help pass a progressive agenda during this once in a generation opportunity. And most importantly, can beat Tom Tiffany.
Senator, you mentioned the voter engagement, and currently polling is showing that a lot of voters are not paying attention to the mm-hmm. gubernatorial race, to the Supreme Court race, which we can get into in just a few moments. But how do you stand out at a time when people really aren't paying attention or the engagement feels so low?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that this is normal, right? Most voters are not paying attention this early in the process. And keep in mind, we have another election this coming Tuesday,
yes.
Right? So this isn't even the next election. Generally, in a primary like this, people are going to start to pay attention in the summer, right? Not last year or this winter or before the April 7th election. So I think the most important thing is to continue traveling around the state, talking with folks as much as I can. And what I've noticed is that top of mind for people is fighting this Trump regime. People are so angry about what is happening in this country and the way that our rights are being violated. They want someone who is capable of standing up to what this regime is doing, who is willing to call out the abuses of the Trump administration without mincing words, and who has a plan ready to fight the Trump administration. Secondarily to that, of course, you know, we've had 16 years of Republican gerrymandered rule at the state level, and now that's going to end. We're going to have a Democratic state Senate, and we're going to have an assembly that's really close one way or the other. So if we have a governor who knows how to use the levers of power, who has that experience of getting things done in tough legislative environments, this could be an incredible opportunity for us to have a more progressive future in Wisconsin. Again, hinging on whether or not our governor is able and willing to use political power to get it done.
State Senator Kel DeRoys is our guest. She's a candidate for governor here in Wisconsin. KelDeRoys.com is her website. I want to go back to something you said in your previous answer, Senator, when you were talking about the Democrats not being able to coalesce around one candidate. In reality, how does something like that happen? Does the state party call all seven of you in and everybody has a talk? Do we do,
no.
Or do we just let it go until,
that's like
you said?
Noir movie.
Right. But is it just like you said, where we now just wait and maybe some of these candidates who aren't doing well in the polls, and to be fair, you're included in that, not doing real well in the polls. So Democrats just wait? I mean, that seems to be the problem with Democrats in every race, not in just this Wisconsin gubernatorial race. Everybody waits. And
well, yeah, I mean, I agree. It is a risk in a situation like this. And I wouldn't expect anybody to drop out. There's no smoke-filled back room, right, where people are going to be put to the wall and said, you've got to drop out because you're not ready to be governor, or you're too weak of a candidate in the general and you put it at risk. You know, some people wish for that. But on the other hand, you know, people hate it when they perceive that the party, sure, is interfering in primaries, even when that doesn't happen. And so, I think, first of all, no, this is a wide open race, right? Mm-hmm. No poll matters until people start spending money,
true,
to actually communicate with voters, which is not going to happen until much later in the summer. And what the polls reflect now is who has spent a lot of money. So I would not give any credence to that. That's not how people should be making their decisions. But I do think it's important to look for some of the signals in the race. See if, you know, Tony Evers is not going to endorse. Tammy Baldwin, sure, is not going to endorse. But there may be some big endorsements that happen from, you know, big institutions like unions or other folks that, you know, can help point the way. And I think as people start to pay attention and as those endorsements roll out, that will hopefully give people a signal about who the candidates are that are viable. And people should just also be able to use their judgment, right? We, sure, know what Wisconsin is. Wisconsin is a very purple state. We actually have more Republicans than Democrats. So we need a candidate who can bring rural, urban, and suburban voters together. And I think I'm very well positioned to do that, number one, because I grew up in rural Wisconsin. I'm from north of Highway 29, from rural Taylor County outside of Medford, Wisconsin. And I now represent Dane County, a big urban area, which does give me an advantage in the primary. But more than that, I have a strong bipartisan track record of over 20 years of actually getting things done. And if you want to be governor in a purple state, it's pretty important to have a track, yeah, record like that, that, yes, shows you can work with people.
True, true.
Because, you know, nobody's going to hand us a 15-year illegitimate Democratic trifecta to fix all this nonsense. We got to be prepared to do it in tough political environments. And that's what I spent my whole career doing.
Let's actually talk a little bit about that, because obviously we've seen Robin Voss step down. We've seen Devin LeMahieu mm-hmm. decide to step down. You mentioned the fact that the majorities in the legislature could tighten up even more. So what does that look like for Democrats? I mean, how exciting is that? And I find it actually absolutely exciting that we could see that much of a power shift happen in the state. So what does that look like for the Democrats right now?
Jamie, it's really exciting. This is our chance. I have worked so hard for this ever since 2010, when Republicans came in and swept the state and then gerrymandered it all to heck. And to be in a position where we are on the cusp of having a Democratic Senate majority, which I firmly believe is going to happen, is really, really exciting. And the Assembly, listen, there's a reason Robin Voss made that deal on the maps, and it's because those maps were his best chance to hold on to Republican power. So I want to be realistic. There's a chance we could get a Democratic Assembly, but it's also very likely that we will have a narrowly Republican Assembly where we're short by one or two or maybe three seats. Some of that also will depend on who's at the top of the ticket, right? If we have a weaker candidate at the top of the ticket coming through the primary, then we can probably kiss our chances of winning the Assembly goodbye, because it's going to take so much more resources to try to get a weak candidate across the finish line. But what that's going to mean for Wisconsin is that we're able to fund our public schools. If I'm governor, we're going to bring that voucher scheme to a responsible end. It's going to mean we're able to expand access to healthcare and invest in the things that people really, really need, like childcare. We're going to be able to bring down utility costs and grocery costs. And make Wisconsin a place where everyone has the freedom to thrive. That's my vision for the state. Higher wages, lower costs, more freedoms.
Senator, one of the big issues that is facing Wisconsin is property taxes. I hear about it all mm-hmm. the time. And there, do you see any possibility for, as you've mentioned, the importance of bipartisanship, a bipartisan agreement on that? And if you were elected governor, how would you approach the property tax issue in this state?
Property taxes are way too high for one main reason, and that's because Republicans have, for 30 of the last 32 years, starved our public schools and our local governments of the resources that they need to function well. So when you think about property taxes, the reason that they are so high is because our school districts and our local governments have to continually go to referendum to keep the lights on, because the legislature has taken funding down so far, especially for public education, and because we are funding billions of dollars from our local schools into these private voucher schemes, right? So we're paying property taxes thinking that they're going to our local schools, but they're not. They're actually taking a huge chunk of that money and giving it directly to voucher schools. So those are the big drivers of property taxes. And if you want to solve it, you've got to actually fund schools and local governments at the state level, which is more equitable. That'll take the pressure off the property taxes and have a better system that will let our local governments and our schools actually be able to budget long term without having to go to referendum.
We're talking with Senator Kel DeRoy. She represents Senate District 26. She's also a candidate for Wisconsin governor, kelderoys.com, if you want to see more about her platform. But, you know, when we talk about property taxes, we've also heard about the state surplus. And mm-hmm. what are those negotiations looking like right now? Are Republicans willing to have those conversations about the property tax relief with that surplus? Or is that just something that they're going to kick the can on and hope that they get a Tom Tiffany in office?
Well, here's something that really irritates me, Jamie. We talk about a surplus, but it's not really a surplus. When we're spending $3,300 less per child in Wisconsin than we did 15 years ago, we really see that money for what it is, which is money that's been taken away from our children and their educational opportunities. And the surplus that's being discussed now by the governor and the Republican legislative leaders, all three of whom, by the way, are going to be gone next year, right? They are not going to be around to deal with the consequences of what they're doing. It's extremely dangerous. This is a projected surplus. This is not money that we've got sitting in the checking account. This is the $2.5 billion that the Fiscal Bureau said, well, we anticipate if things continue that we could have this amount of money come next June. So over a year from now, to spend it by essentially lighting a huge bit of it on fire as a just a straight tax rebate would be extremely irresponsible. We have no idea what the fiscal condition of the state is going to be. We could be in a deep recession. We have a president that illegally attacked Iran, that has started a wild conflagration in the Middle East. Energy prices are skyrocketing, right? Oil could continue going up. Gas prices are rising. That's going to have a very negative impact on our economy. We also have so many years of unmet needs for K-12, for early childhood. The universities of Wisconsin is short $1 billion, and they've closed half a dozen campuses in recent years, right? So there's things that we need to spend money on. And just lighting it on fire with a one-time rebate is a terrible use of that money.
State Senator Kelda Royce has been our guest. She's a candidate for Wisconsin governor. Senator, thank you for being here. Have a wonderful Easter weekend, and good luck with the campaign.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
You're welcome. When we come back, we switch from politics to burgers. It is Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday morning. Hopefully your day is off to a great start. I know that large portions of the northern part of the state without power today due to all of those ice storms yesterday. So hopefully that is not you this morning, but hopefully everybody's doing a little cleanup and doing okay up there, because I know that that was kind of a brutal weather system that came through for a lot of people yesterday. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. There is nothing better in the culinary world than a good hamburger. Ooh. So the question for you this morning is, who has the best hamburger in Wisconsin? There's a reason we're asking, but we want to know from you, because I'm always looking for a good burger. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Who has the best burger in Wisconsin? The reason I ask is because the Wisconsin Beef Council is running their best burger contest in relation to March Madness, and they are down to the Elite Eight. But I want to start, I want to ask everybody here on the show, Jamie, what makes a good burger to you?
A good burger for me has to be how, it can't be dry. Right? Like some people want to press their burgers until all the juice is out. Oh, and that's awful. So it can't be dry. And I like, gosh, I guess, I don't know if I have like a favorite burger. I've had a lot of burgers. My husband is kind of a burger connoisseur. So we make a lot of our own. We eat a lot of burgers at different places. I like a little lettuce, tomato, some onion, ketchup, mustard. Got to be thick. I don't want like the small squishy burger. Like I want more burger, less bun.
So you want meat?
Yeah.
More.
No, okay. I don't want more bun than burger.
Pretzel or brioche for your bun? Toasted and untoasted.
Toasted for sure. Because if it's not toasted, it gets squishy, right? And then you venture falling apart, and then you get a mess, and nobody wants to eat their burger with a fork. Toasted, and I don't like a pretzel bun. A nice soft brioche is really good. I'm not a pretzel bun person. So those are my ideals.
Those are all good. And I mean, you went with the classic toppings, which is always very good. Mm-hmm. Parker, what makes a good burger for a young Parker?
Young Parker likes a juicy burger as well. Young Parker also likes barbecue on his burger sometimes.
Ooh,
really?
Yeah. Nice.
Barbecue sauce.
A little tangier than the ketchup.
A little tangy, yeah. Okay. Something in there. I'm a fan of that.
I like it.
Yeah. There you go. And pretzel bun, Brian.
Pretzel bun.
Pretzel bun.
All right.
Okay.
See?
All right.
Okay. I think that's a young person's game, the pretzel bun.
Perhaps. Yourself,
my
Brian?
Daughter also loves the pretzel bun. I'm with you guys on the patty. It's got to be thicker. It's got to be, when I was young, I wanted it cooked so there was no color and no juice. That was dumb. Now I like a little juicy cheeseburger.
A little pink.
I like it. Yeah, a little pink. Now, when it comes to toppings, it depends on the day. There's a lot of days I'm with Jamie. I go either raw or grilled onions, some lettuce. I like a bread and butter pickle on there, ketchup and mustard. But then there's days I like to get, and Swiss cheese. Got to be Swiss cheese.
Swiss
Don't give me Kraft American cheese.
No.
On a regular cheeseburger, I want Swiss cheese. But then there's days I like blue cheese. There's times I look at a menu and I go, this burger sounds crazy. Some bacon, I was getting into this thing where I was eating it. We'd go to this place that had a hangover burger and had bacon and a fried egg on it.
Yeah. Oh, my husband loves an egg burger.
Those,
it's one of his favorites.
Those are nice.
One of his favorites.
So Anyway, the Elite Eight has been named. And the Beef Council, which is a nonprofit organization, is down to this. They were selected through a tally of online submissions, and we still want to hear from you. You're the best burger in Wisconsin. Doesn't have to be on this list. Could be a little back. Because, see, sometimes you get the best burger in the most out-of-the-way places. So maybe you're in the North Woods, and there's this shack on the side of the road, and you know they make the best burgers. And maybe you don't want to tell us because you don't want us all going there.
My kitchen on Sunday is where you should be. We're doing Juicy Lucy's for our Easter dinner. Homemade Lucy's. Yeah.
I've had Juicy Lucy's a number of times. Mostly I go to Matt's when I'm in the Twin Cities to get the Juicy Lucy.
Oh, yeah.
Like most people, the first time I had a Juicy Lucy, I had to go to the burn unit because I was sprayed with molten cheese.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I look the way I do. I used to be very. I used to look like George Clooney.
John.
Then I had a Juicy Lucy. They just.
John over in on our social says 11-11 burgers in Fond du Lac, solid. Which, given it's in Fond du Lac, says something. No shade on Fond du Lac, John.
Mark says prime rib hamburgers are likely the best I've ever eaten. I've never had one made out of prime rib.
Ooh, that sounds good though. I have to say though, one of the finalists on this list from the Wisconsin Beef Council is in Baraboo. And,
yes, brothers. On Oak. Have you been there?
Yes, and here's why. Because it was right across the street from our radio station when we first bought it. It might also be the reason why I had to go on a metabolic weight loss system because we worked like 14 hours a day, and so two of our meals were usually them bringing us food across the street so that we could continue to work. So delicious, delicious burgers, though.
Well, here are the Elite Eight. Skippy's Burger Bar in Thiensville. Game Over in West Bend, Brew and Ole's in Burlington, the aforementioned Brothers on Oak in Baraboo, The Dump Bar and Grill. Now, see, I want to go there. That's in Cambria. I want to go there just for the name.
Yeah, the name's awesome.
That name makes me think it is going to be great to eat that. Local Press Eatery in Sheboygan, Mim's Charcoal Grill in Menasha, and Pastimes Pub and Grill in Ripon. So those are your Elite Eight. You can go on the Wisconsin Beef Council and vote. But those, now I want a burger. I actually bought two burgers because I used to just buy the beef in bulk and hand shape my own. But now that it's sometimes just, it's just my wife and I, sometimes I'll buy those pub burgers at the store, the half pounders.
Yeah.
Oh, man, they make a nice burger.
They do.
And,
yeah.
Now I want a burger.
I know. I'll be hand shaping my own Juicy Lucy's this weekend. And there's a trick to doing that because you have to make a pocket for the cheese. You can't just put the cheese in the center because it will just gush out. And then you got to get your seams perfectly. And you can't
use two patties.
I basically do two thinner patties so that it makes the one thicker patty that the family likes. And then I make a bit of a pocket to put my cheese in there so it can't just gush out. But the trick to that is you have to get your seams perfectly, because when you press it or you put it on a grill, it's just gonna all run out. So it takes a little bit. My family's always like, oh, it's just easy, it's just a burger. No,
you foolish mortals, how dare you besmirch my Juicy Lucy.
That's right.
I want to get an update on Monday.
Okay.
Those sound delicious.
All right.
Well, listen, we're going to come back with the third hour. If you're on WMDX, you can go listen to Stephanie Miller, or you can be smart and just come on the app and listen to us for the rest of the time, because this is Daybreak and this is The City.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.